What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton.
One of the perks about doing what I do, whether it's this platform or other platforms, if I have a chance and opportunity to speak with a former NHL player, then I jump at that. And here is that opportunity. Former goaltender Dwayne Roloson joined me here on Pucks and Seven. You and I just talked a couple of seconds ago about kind of you went off the road for this. Not literally, but you went off the road for this. So I appreciate you taking the break and doing this with me.
Yeah, no problem. It's nice to get away from the windshield a little bit, you know, so get here, relax and grab something to eat and get going on the way.
All right, let's do it. Lots to get into. I'm going to go 77 seconds with you a bit later on, kind of seven questions, hockey, non-hockey related. Nice way to finish the segment. And I want to talk a lot about, too, not about your game and when you played, but the game today and just different things like that, how much it's evolved. Let's begin, though, with this quote, and I always remember this by Jacques Plante, and I may be paraphrasing a tiny bit, but he said he has the best job in the world when he's a goaltender. Everybody loves you, but when that red light goes on behind you, it's not good. Just take us into the mindset when you played, being a goalie, the pressure, because I would assume there's more pressure felt by you, possibly in a goaltender, than there is with the rest of the team.
Yeah, Jock's right. Like how many jobs in the world when you make a mistake,
right?
Somebody puts a red light on the Jumbotron, focuses in on you, and you got 20,000 people screaming.
Yeah, it's not fun.
so that's your job. Whether you make the mistake or not, you know, that always happens. So it's one of those things you gotta learn to deal with, and it's hard. And that's where you see the maturity and, you know, guys that have been, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in the game,
right,
versus the first or second year guy in the NHL level. It's just, it's a different animal when you get scored on. So just mentally, how do you prepare? How do you refocus to, you know, prepare for the next shot or the next play? Because you can't really do anything about what's happened in the past. You got to focus on the future, and so just trying to get your mindset right, and that's a tough one to do and learn, and that's, you know, for me with the guys that I work with is, mm-hmm, trying to get them over that hump of understanding, hey, you're going to get scored on.
Yeah,
it's just the way the game's played and how it is, and we're not perfect, we're human, so we just got to figure out how we can adapt and refocus again to be the best we can and not let one goal turn into 2, 3, 4, or 5.
How much do you love giving back to the game? The game gave you so much over the 14 years of played, even just other leagues and different times you put on the pads and on the skates, but how much do you enjoy giving back? You just talked about some of the players and different people that you speak to about giving their knowledge or your knowledge to them about goaltending.
Yeah, I love giving back. You know, the last 3 or 4 years I've been volunteering. So at Lake State, I was there for a couple of years, and now I'm at Niagara. So it's fun. It's enjoyable, especially at that level. They're all aspiring to be pros, to make the next step. And, you know, so for me, it's fun to be able to talk to them, whether it's about goaltending, whether it's about scoring, whether it's about defending, or whether it's about life. It's really enjoyable, and I love doing it.
Game has changed. I want to take you back to when you were signed as a free agent by the Calgary Flames in the mid-90s. Don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about Dominic Hasek and when you were backing him up, certainly in Buffalo. Just, I mean, he is, he'll go down in history for me. I watched him play as one of the most unorthodox goaltenders that you'll ever see play, but he was one of the best at playing the game. So no style points whatsoever for Dominic Hasek. Can you take us into a little bit of his mindset? Any stories that you remember specifically about him when you first met him?
Yeah, you know, Dom was Dom was tough to get to know.
Okay.
For some whatever reason it is, him and I got along really well.
That's good.
Steve Shields before him,
yep.
Not so much. Even Marty Biron, to a, you know, Marty, he was sort of in between Steve and I with relationship with Dom. And now that grew later on in Marty's career and Dom's career. But, you know, for some reason, Dom was really open with me. Probably because he didn't have to worry about me. I wasn't trying to take his job or I wasn't going to get his job.
Right.
But he was awesome. You know, Dom's such a, he's got his master's in history. Like the things that people don't know about him, he's a borderline genius. And, you know, to a point that, you know, in the locker room, he didn't know a guy's first name. See, he knew everybody by their nickname and that was it. And it was pretty funny and comical, in the locker room. Cause guys would, Hey, what's my first name?
No idea.
And he wouldn't know. So, but, you know, that's just to Dom. Dom just like, that's how he was. But, both him playing the game. Yeah. He was very unorthodox. He didn't know what he was doing. Players didn't know what he was doing.
Right.
But there was a method to his madness. You know, he was like two or three steps ahead of everybody else. That's why he was so good. He knew what was going on before the players receiving the puck knew what they were going to do with it. He was just able to read the game so well. And he stayed ahead of the play all the time. Like, I remember we're in Dallas one night. Zuboff came out from behind and at this before the red line got taken out. And Dave Gagne is at the red line getting a breakaway pass. And by the time he received it and turned around and started going towards the net, there's Dom wide out, spread out, and a two-pad stack with a poke check. And Dave's like going over top of him and not knowing what's going on. But it just, that's how well he read the game. And that's why he was so good. Like he was just off the charts good and reading and his work ethic. Like he worked so hard in practice, you know, after games, during games, he extremely hard worker.
That's what makes the greats too, not just Dominic Hasek, but the greats like a Gretzky and the McDavids and the Lemieux and Bobby Orr. You knew the play before it happened, which is something I don't think you can teach. You're kind of built, given it, and you're born with that. You played with great players. You played behind great players. You faced great players in the 90s and throughout your career. Name me three that were probably the maybe the most fun to watch for you. I know that you can't just sit there and watch and be a fan when you're playing, but kind of the ones that you sat back and think, wow, you know, these guys are the real deal.
Well, I just remember one night, unfortunately, Steve Chason was the defender and he's no longer with us, but I was playing with Calgary at the time and we're in the old igloo in Pittsburgh and Mario beat Steve Chason three times in the same one-on-one. And he comes back to the bench. He goes, hey, next time Pierre calls me to go on the ice and Mario's out there, tell him I'm hurt, okay? Like, but Mario in his prime was so fun to watch and just his ability and his knowledge of the game and knowing where guys were. And, you know, Wayne did his thing. Mario did his thing in the same similar eras, but different eras. And Mario was a lot different than Wayne was, but he was always so fun to watch. And me having the front row seat, I'm glad I wasn't playing that night. It was Trevor Kidd. So, he was, to me, was one of the great guys to watch. And then playing against Eisenman and Sakic, those two guys, I loved playing against them, but also hated playing against them just because of their abilities and their vision. And, you know, neither one of them had cannons for shots, but they were accurate. They're on the point. And so you have to be aware of when they're on the ice and what was going on.
You spent a number of years in the league. You spent time with a few teams. I want to go back to that trade, and it's certainly well documented when you were traded to Edmonton and you guys went on an incredible run. I got the numbers. You had a .929 save percentage in that first round win over Detroit. And then you stopped 99 of 107 shots going through that second round. .934 save percentage in the Western Conference Final. I know it did end it as well, obviously with the injury and what have you. But that run for you, number one, takes me in from going from one team to another, and then suddenly you find yourselves after some hard work into the playoffs right at the end of it, and then you go on this kind of magical run here.
Yeah, it was surreal, the run, but I think getting traded there at first, you know, I knew a lot of guys in the organization, but I didn't know them that well.
Right.
When I first got traded there, I knew Prongs from St. Louis's organization, and his wife and family weren't there at the time. So the first couple of days, we were on the road, I think, originally. Like, I got traded. I met the team in San Jose, went to Columbus, then went to Minnesota, and then back to Edmonton. And I think I was 0-3 my first three games. Right. And, you know, I'm sure they're questioning, oh, what do we do here? but, you know, get back to Edmonton. It was late at night. Prongs was like, yeah, you're going to come stay with me for the next couple of days and get organized, get settled in here. And from then it was just getting to know the guys. Like that team in Edmonton, you know, leaving Minnesota, we were really close. But going to Edmonton, like how close that organization from top to bottom to the team itself was so close. And that gave us, I think, that was the biggest reason why we had success, was just how close we were. And nobody was bigger than anybody else. And everyone did every small thing to win a hockey game. And that's from the presidents down to management, to down to the equipment guys, to medical guys, and to the players. And, it, you know, I think that was our big success, is how close of a team we were. And that allowed us to have success on the ice.
Must tug at your heart a bit more the last couple of seasons with Edmonton being so close to winning to winning that cup.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to get out for a few games out there. And, you know, I'm lucky. My youngest is an Oilers fan, so he lived in Edmonton. He moved back there and finished high school in Edmonton. So he's an Oilers fan, and he likes to watch the games. So, you know, my other guy's a Dallas fan, so he didn't come out the first year because they were playing Dallas in the playoffs when we went out. But the last year he went out with us. So, but it's always fun going back. It's a great place to play, and I really enjoyed my time there. Really enjoyed the fans and the city. It's a great place for people who have never been out there. It's a lot of fun. It's enjoyable, and it gets a bad rep, but it's not warranted. I really enjoyed my time. My family did, and like I said, my youngest went back and went to high school there and played hockey there, and he loved it as well.
94 again, you came in, and going back to the magical run that you guys had with Edmonton, want to go to quickly that save you made, and I'm sure you remember it, on Jonathan Chichu. In that double overtime, I was watching it the other day because I knew you were coming on, and I remembered it, remembered when it happened, and I've been watching it off and on for the last however number of years it's gone. But that was unbelievable. Is it fair to say that's probably your best save that you made in your career? At the biggest moment, perhaps?
I think at the biggest moment, yes. At the biggest moment. In overtime, you know, and for us, you know, having lost in San Jose and then coming back, that was sort of like a turning point. I don't want to say I was a turning point. I think as a team, we turned the tables in that game.
Yep.
The momentum was on our side. We just weren't able to score as much. And just making that save, it just sort of allowed our guys some breath of fresh air and just sort of, hey, all right, we're good.
Yep.
Now we just got to go score. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to know who was on the ice and who was coming and what was going to happen, almost a Hasek-ish, sort of make the read and know what's going on before and sort of set yourself up to make the save. And, you know, lucky, but also did everything right to get there and make the save. So, I was able to read what Joe was doing and was able to get a glove on Cheech, who I think he had scored 50 of that year or
He
something like
did.
that.
He did.
It's one of those ones that you look back during a playoff run and say things would have been different, but we were able to win and go on and win the series.
The game is different today. It is more wide open. It's a lot faster. They shoot the pucks a lot harder. It's just incredible where the game is at. Just kind of the changes that you've seen, and I always ask this too about somebody who's been in the league a while ago, and if they were in the league right now, I mean, how do you think you would be able to fare in this league? Because with all the different changes and just how skilled all these players are, not saying the word skilled when you played, but it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's the game's so much faster now, and it's, you know, with the rule changes, the clutching and grabbing,
right,
that's not allowed anymore. It gives these high-end guys the ability to use their skill and their speed. Like, you know, there were guys that could skate like McDavid during our era, but they were never allowed to. There was always somebody on them, somebody holding them back.
Right.
You know, now these guys have the speed, but their ability to handle the puck and make the moves at the speed that they're going is, that's what's awing to me in the game today. Their ability to do it at such a high speed. How would I be able to adapt? I think I'd be fine, but you know, at the same time, I'm haven't had the pads on since 2016. So, but you know, just being able to read, you'd have to read a lot more. You'd have to understand what guys are trying to do. In our area, it wasn't set in stone what guys were going to do, but you had a pretty good idea just the way we defended, how teams defended. Mm-hmm. Now it's pretty hard to defend. It's in an organization like Jacques Lemaire's structure in Minnesota was, I wouldn't want to say it was easy to be a goalie, but the quality of shots weren't as high as it was when I got traded to Edmonton that I was seeing, you know, just the way we defended versus how Edmonton defended, you know, and sort of in the game today, it's like, is it easier to play in Carolina with Rock?
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
That's defensive style versus Edmonton. You know, who's to say? It's never easy.
Right.
But it's a structure of what your team defense allows what your goalie can do. So if I'm on a defensive team, I probably could play. But if I'm on a not-so-defensive team, I don't know if I could play in the era today. It'd be a lot of side-to-sides, a lot of stuff that I'd be playing behind the play a little bit, and now with the way teams are drafting and getting guys, I would never have made an NHL. You know, I'm not 6'2", and that's what they're looking at. And do I agree with it? No, but I probably would have never made the NHL because of my size.
It should be about the skill. It should not be about the size, but I get it.
Yeah,
I absolutely get that.
And that's unfortunate for some of the guys that are smaller. They're more than capable of playing the game today and smarter than some of these bigger guys, but teams won't look at them, unfortunately. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say some teams, certainly the height and the physical prowess, I guess, of goaltenders has increased. I absolutely see that. But I wish that the game, and even in other sports too, it doesn't matter the size. I look at, say, a forward, for example, Martin St-Louis, the coach of Montreal right now. I mean, he was tiny, but he was very good. You don't see a lot of these smaller guys these days do that. So yeah, it's unfortunate. If somebody, if you see someone that you're speaking to or you're coaching or you're volunteering or something, and does someone, has any kid ever come up to you and said, hey, you know what? I think I can do it, but like, I'm just not tall enough. And if so, what's the message that you send to them?
Yeah, this is like when I was coaching in Victoria with the Royals in the Western League, we had a goalie that set a lot of records in the Western League for saves and things like that. And so we had teams coming in, and Detroit was one of them, Toronto was another one. And they're like, oh, what do you think? What's his size? I said, he's my size. I can't take him back. I'm like, he's making all these saves. He's setting records. But since he's under 6'2", you can't take him back to your gym. I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
Like, if you got a goalie that's going to make saves, he's going to give you a chance to win day in and day out. Does it matter if he's 5'1" or 6'4"?
Shouldn't.
Like, I understand what they're thinking, but you see with a lot of stresses on the body with the bigger guys, they're injured a lot more than the smaller guys. And especially the way the position has changed, there's a lot more stress on goalies' hips and knees because of the down and ups and the east-west plays and, the reverse HB that I cannot stand that causes more goals than saves. But all this stress goes on onto this body, and it's a big body to try to, stay healthy through. And, it's too much stress on ligaments and joints and for the bigger guys. And, if you got a smaller guy that's, Saros is great. Like, there's nothing wrong with him. He's making saves and he's in the game. And there's other guys too, but, it's some of these guys that just get, nope, we don't want him because he's not big enough. Yeah. It doesn't check a box for us. It's frustrating for me, but at the same time, you're trying to tell these guys, well, NHL might not be your answer because of your size, but, try. Let's go to the AHL. Let's work your way up. Prove your, if not, go to Europe. Great quality of life.
Yep.
Great hockey. Make some good money. And, it's a lot easier on your body with the travel and everything else over there. And, so if you get your degree and go play for a little bit, go have some fun and see what happens. And you sort of try to give a positive out of it, but at the same time, it's frustrating for these guys to see guys that are 3 or 4 inches taller than them that aren't as good.
Yeah.
Still, they're getting the contracts where these guys are way better and not getting the contracts. Unfortunately, that's the way the game is.
That's tough. It is the way the game is. And plus, if you go to Europe, you'll play. Right? And that's all these guys want to do at the end of it. They want to play and want to keep going as long as they can. The game today, again, you talked about the McDavids, and there's, the Austin Matthews, and still Crosby doing what he's doing at his age, and Ovechkin still potting goals left, right, and center. The youth today, I'm talking about Matthew Schaefer, who's still not 19, and the Connor Bedards and the Macklin Celebrinis. It is just amazing to me to see where we're at as NHL fans. You have that little group, then you have the group with McDavid, mid-20s, whatever it is now, and then you have some of the elder statesmen. I don't think hockey's been in a better spot when it comes to talent.
No, I agree with you 100% there. Like, the talent is getting showcased a lot more than what it was during my era, during Wayne and Mario. Like, they were highlighted, but you didn't, with the clutching and grabbing in the game, you couldn't see their ability. Like, it's Joe Sakic and Yzerman and Wayne and Mario Jagr, the guys in the past, copies. Were they as good as these guys today? I would say so. Did they have the ability that these guys do? Yes, but they didn't have the time and space. They didn't, you know, the ability for them to showcase it wasn't there. You know, you were in awe with some of their plays they made, but you know, if these guys, as soon as they touch a puck, you're in awe because they can build speed. They have time and space
so
to build
quickly.
The speed.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, is that because of them or is that because of the game? You know, that's up for debate, but you know, but the what TV is doing for the game, for these guys, the social media, as much as it's bad, it is good for the game. Right? These guys are like, you got kids now watching what they're doing on with through social media. Now you see all these kids trying this stuff where as when I was a kid, you didn't see guys try that because they'd have to sit on the bench.
Right.
Now it's like, you know, the Zegerses of the world, like, you know, pulling stunts in during shootouts, like guys in our wouldn't have
he's
done
pretty
that
good.
Because
he's pretty good at the shootout.
But guys, what he's doing, guys wouldn't do that because they're afraid to get sent down or afraid to be sat on the bench. You know, now now these guys just do it. Just it's because that's what how they've lived and grown up, and that's where the game is, and it's where the media is at, and you know, growing the game. And I agree with you. I don't think the game's been in a better spot than it is today, with coverage, with the social media and the players that's in it. Like, you know, they're great ambassadors to the game, and you know, it's the next level guys coming in. They're, you know, when we were younger, there was very few 18, 19, 20 year olds. They're all 23, 24, 25. You have to go pay your dues. You have to go, you know, many, we had the Brett Burns and Pierre-Marc Bouchards who stayed on our team, but they had limited amounts of ice time at the time to grow, learn, and understand. But now these guys are getting thrown right into the world like the Bedards. They go, you're playing 12, 15, 20 minutes a night. You go play, you know, and live. We live by your mistakes, and we'll teach you guys on the fly, where guys had to go to the minors and do that first. Back in my era, in my days, and and I'm not that far removed, but
right.
That's how the game has changed now. These guys are coming in; they're ready to go right away.
And Burns, he's still playing. He's still.
I love it. It's awesome.
That team, Dwayne, in Colorado. I mean, they just don't lose. It's unbelievable.
It's crazy. It's you know, I'm still in touch with Freddie Anderson a lot, I'm happy he's playing well and he's staying healthy this year. And,
That's big.
I love watching Burnsy play. It's just seeing him and thinking back to him and being an 18-year-old and all the silly things he used to do and say.
I'm sure he still does just, them, right?
I'm sure he does. And, you know, it's awesome. You know, but that's part of the guy's learning. Take care of your body. You can play as long as the game allows you to play and the organizations allow you to play. If you're taking care of your body and doing things right, so you know, time's not an animal. It's on your side.
And he's in a great spot with a really good team in Colorado.
Yeah.
So good on him. Let's do 77 seconds with you. Seven questions. Again, no timer. So here we go. Four Nations. I assume that you loved it like we all did. Should that replace the All-Star game?
Yes, I think it's a great change. I don't think you can do it every year, just because of the physical side of it. The All-Star game, I think it's a little boring. It's great to see the skill, and that's in my era. It was great to see the skill that the guys had that you couldn't see in a game. Now today, like, maybe it's totally different, not even an All-Star game, just a skill session where guys can go show off their tricks and all that other good stuff.
I agree. Toughest shooter that you ever faced when you played?
I think Eiserman, Sakic were the toughest shooters, just to see their release and find their release. The hardest was probably, growing up with him, was Rob Blake. You know, I hated practicing with him and hated seeing him against him. And and obviously Al MacInnis, he had a cannon.
Always wondered too, you give those players like the MacInnises and Blakes and whoever else had the great shots, you give them the sticks now, or those big heavy wooden sticks back then, just what they would do. Yeah. 3-on-3, more 3-on-3, or after 5 minutes, go to the shootout?
I say more 3-on-3. I love the 3-on-3. I like the look of it. It sort of showcases the skill level, like we talked about, especially with the younger guys and their ability to play the game. You know, the shootout to me, it's okay, but I hate deciding games on shootouts, like the Olympics and all that stuff. I hate the shootout. It's just, it's a luck of the draw. Like it could be a fluky one goes in. I'd rather see a skill play or something like that in a 3-on-3 end of game.
I've said this all the time in hockey. You can outplay a team, outshoot them 45-10, yet it's 2-2, and then you go to the shootout, and then that team that you outshot ends up winning. It's not a one-on-one game. It's a team sport.
Yeah.
Favorite city to play in, go to a game in to play in, outside of the teams that you played for?
Oh, geez.
Favorite barn to visit? Favorite barn to visit?
I like going to the Old Joe.
Okay.
And Boston. I like going into Boston. I went to school in New England, so it was always nice. It was almost a mini homecoming. And Joe Louis, I love Joe Louis. I love playing there. And, you know, playing in Hockeytown was one of those places that I like to go.
Worst building that you played in, if you can remember. Maybe the toughest fan base, perhaps, too, also maybe tie into that one.
Well, the toughest fan base, I think, was Boston, was pretty bad.
Okay.
but that's part of the why I liked it.
Yeah.
Dallas was always tough, and there, you know, going in there, it was tough. I'd say Edmonton before I got traded there was always another tough building for me to play in.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I didn't like it there. But you know, Dallas and Boston were probably the two rowdiest. Anything could happen at any time. And the worst building, I think, was for me, was probably the old Boston Garden.
Okay.
And the Igloo were tough buildings. It just, you know, they needed an update, and then they got them, and rightfully
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, they were the two ugly ones for me.
Long time coming. Looking at the game as well today, outdoor games, is there enough? Would you like to see more?
I love the outdoor games. I was able to be a part of two of them, one as a coach in Anaheim and the other one in Edmonton when we played in Winnipeg. So I really enjoyed it. I loved it as from the alumni side of it. I know they're trying to get away from the alumni being a part of it just because of cost.
Yeah.
But I think it's great. And I think it's time and a place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the league is doing a good job of trying to balance it and, you know, and give Dan a lot of credit for making great ice. It's hard to do
it's
for them.
Easy.
And, and especially for, The game is still worth something. So you know, you got to have good ice, but it's a great environment. It's a great aspect, and you know, I still tune in when there's an outdoor game. I want to watch it. I want to see the facility that they're in, and it's a lot of fun. It sort of takes you back to your youth. And I think the best part was when it was snowing, the Pittsburgh game. And
those are
the best ones because of the elements. You know, I wouldn't have wanted to play in the Edmonton one when it was minus 40 out.
No.
But you know, that was the first one they did, and it was awesome. You know, the guys love playing in it, and you know, I love watching it.
Doesn't matter how much adrenaline you have pumping, you still can't get warm in minus 40.
Yeah.
All those bad.
Yeah.
Well, there's no chance.
Exactly.
No chance.
Exactly.
Last one. When you were playing during the off season, what was your go to, your favorite activity to do in the off season between years?
Yeah. In the off season, just hanging out with family. Just, you know, with the kids, they're young, they're playing soccer. I played soccer growing up, and my wife's a pretty pretty good golfer. If I don't play well, she beats me. So,
okay.
You know, as a family, we did a lot of golf and then run the kids around to their sporting events and just doing family time and then trying to get on the water as much as we can. We live in Port Dover in the summertime.
Yep.
So
beautiful.
We're on the water a lot. So we get out in the boat and do a lot of water sport stuff. So that for me, that was it. Get out and try and get back family time that you missed during the year. Cause it's, you know, thankfully I have a very independent wife and during the season, our wives aren't, or spouses aren't independent, it's very taxing. And
sure,
with her being independent, I was able to focus on the game and focus on me. And then summertime, that's when I try to get back and try to spend all my time with my family and as much as I can.
That's a big win. Dwayne, you made some stops in your career. You made one stop today for me, so I do appreciate that. And I would love to have you back on. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it. And let me know anytime.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.